You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcast, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 22nd, 2021. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the world headquarters of the Cornfield Resistance, where we hear the presidential Diet Pepsi button in the Oval Office has been replaced with a presidential fuck you button. It's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
I think it was Diet Coke.
I don't
not
care.
Diet Pepsi, but you know, whatever it was, it came on a silver platter when he pushed a red button on his desk.
Look what I can do. Push a button, they bring me some beverage. I have a two scoops button, but you can't see it.
That's under the desk, yeah, that's, right?
That's what it's called, the panic button, sir. And really, you shouldn't push that just for ice cream. Okay, whatever. You know, Air Force idiots. And he's gone now. So I think it's the most important thing we can do is forget it ever happened.
As my colleague Carolee said, it is my life's work to make sure never, ever does anyone forget that the Republican Party inflicted the past 4 years on us.
Mm-hmm. I predict Kayleigh McEnany or mm-hmm. one of them, a Huckabee, will have a show on CNN or perhaps MSNBC where she will say in 6 years' time, 5 years' time, 3 years' time, my former boss, whatever you thought of him. And everyone will just go, yeah. Well, you know, it's a long time ago and, you know, we're alive and we didn't get fucked over too badly. So I guess it doesn't really matter.
Don't think that's how it's going to turn out.
Hope springs eternal.
I've been thinking a lot this week about Michelle Obama because she was at the inaugural and
yeah.
her hair and outfit and everything made such a splash, and how much she is kind in public to George W. Bush, which yes. puzzles so many of us. You know, we yes. love her.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of images of the transition between Bush and the Obamas and how the little Obama girls were uh-huh. welcomed into the White House yeah. by the Bush family.
Yep.
And I can imagine Michelle Obama facing multiple death threats a day,
mm-hmm.
moving into the White House from her life as, yes, a senator's wife, but, you know, a first-term senator's wife.
Right.
Not knowing a lot of people in Washington, not being, perhaps being a little bit concerned about, I mean, I know she had a definite sense of mission.
Yes.
For what she wanted to do as first lady.
Deeply rooted.
Deeply rooted. And that grounded her.
Mm-hmm.
But it still might have felt a little awe-inspiring and a little bit nerve-wracking to be moving into this position.
Yeah.
And to be welcomed in and told it's going to be okay. And here's some tips on how I handled certain staff issues and did right. things this way. And let my girls show your girls the balcony. Let my girls show your girls the fun they had and the different things they did.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your home now. And here are the fun things you can do. And just set the family at ease.
Yeah.
You wouldn't forget that. You would not forget that.
You know, there's a – I'm going to make a late season audible call, West Wing call. I'm not going to quote the West Wing.
Everybody take a drink.
But once Jimmy Smits had won, you know, had yes. won the White House, his wife, lovely wife, a blonde, hot wife who's, you know, very professional and very thoughtful, but she's not ready.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's going to be the president. And it's a staffing issue. I would like you to come down and meet the staff and, you know, decide in the who stays and who goes and whatnot. And she's thinking, oh, a babysitter and a nanny and, you know, another nanny and maybe somebody. You know, we can pare that down a little bit. And she comes in and there's 50 people there.
Yeah.
Or maybe 100. Is it, well, these mm-hmm. this is the main staff. And this is your scheduler. And this is like, oh, crap. I just inherited a corporation.
Right.
A giant corporation that runs, that with actually employs directly or indirectly thousands of people. Mm-hmm. And my word can shift the alter the lives of all these people. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and she has to really quickly adapt to and there's someone there to say, I'm basically the head valet or the head butler or the head whatever. Mm-hmm. And I will guide you through this. But yeah. it is not something, unless you have been a very wealthy, powerful person with a huge personal staff already.
Like Barbara Bush. Bush got it right away. Boom. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
It would not come naturally.
She'd been CIA headquarters. She'd done it all. Yeah. Yeah. This week, we welcome back an older sponsor of ours for old time's sake.
Yeah.
Hello Fascist. Oh, the Admiral Neal kit for Republicans. Hey.
I love those guys.
You know, you cheered over Trump's wall, applauded family separation, and engaged in sedition against the United States of America. Hey, you have legitimate reasons for thinking the restaurant kitchen is peeing in your food. So try Hello Fascist at-home meal kit. It's like they built a wall around your balsamic pork loin.
You know, that's true. Even though, you know, carry out meals are now necessary for lots of people, that's a lot of what we do now. You know that once they figure out who's calling, they're going to pee in your food. We're just going to.
They're definitely going to pee in your food.
You know, that egg drop soup's a little tart. You know why that is? I'll tell you why that is.
You deserve it.
The bonded, insured staff at Hello Fascist who film the preparation of your food to guarantee there's very little urine will get into it. Just a minimal
very
amount,
little.
Is worth the extra price. And rather than let them starve, they should be able to pay an extraordinary premium amount for basically crappy food, but with no urine in it. Very little.
Minimal amount.
Yeah.
Obviously, the inauguration of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Yay!
Yay!
Takes the top spot this week. All the other news pales. We had speeches mentioning white nationalism, white supremacy.
We did.
I love the National Mall Remembrance.
I did too, very much.
This plague has been going on for a year and been killing people. Now it's 100,000 Benghazis, I like to remind Fox News tweeters. Mm-hmm. And never once did anyone in the Trump administration take a moment to help us grieve.
No. Barack Obama, after virtually every school shooting, every mass killing, was out there, you know, holding hands with people and talking to mm-hmm. people and telling them mm-hmm. that, you know, this is a terrible thing, and crying and singing occasionally and deeply moved by it. And in the Trump administration, you know, grief was weakness. Mm-hmm. It's you know, showing that you're weak. What sort of sissy cries at these sorts of things? And by the way, if we're grieving over it, maybe you're suggesting that something bad happened and we screwed up somehow and we never made a mistake. We've been perfect all the way through. So mm-hmm. there's nothing to mm-hmm. grieve about because we did everything great.
Yeah.
And it was just such a tragedy that never happened because the people who ran this country for 4 years were terrible, terrible people.
But you know who are very good people and very good at their job are the TV producers who put together
yeah.
the Celebrating America TV show Wednesday night.
Yeah.
That show was produced by the same team that put together the Democratic Convention last summer.
Yeah.
And if they're on board to continue to do this kind of thing for Biden for the next 4 years, we're yeah. in very good hands in terms yeah. of, I don't want to overemphasize the importance of that because it is just TV production. Mm-hmm. But it is how America sees this administration
yeah.
and how we celebrate civic holidays. And celebrating America, can you get more corny and patriotic than that?
Oh,
it was
yes.
it was cornballs.
Yes, you can. You get Tom Hanks to do it.
Yes, yeah, right.
You get Tom Hanks to host it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I did say at the end, goodbye, Tom Hanks. See you next time.
Someone, I forget where, was saying, Tom mm-hmm. Hanks, you just got over the Rona. Wear a goddamn coat, okay? Cold out there. You're a national treasure, Tom Hanks.
Dead Roger Ailes is spinning in his grave with envy, and the entire Republican Party really misses Roger Ailes. They yeah. really do
well,
in terms of TV production.
Someone,
yeah.
I forget who it was, someone after the Kennedy inauguration, might have been mm-hmm. a year later, might have been 50 years later, I don't know, but pointed out that the spectacle of it and the sort of the glamour of it and the processionality of it and the ritual of it that was so moving and very well done was, they said, yep, that's a Catholic for you, you know?
No.
You've had 1,500 years, you have 1,700 years of having it drilled into your head that there's a ritualized series mm-hmm. of steps you go through, and it has to be majestic, and it has to be eternal, mm-hmm. and it has to represent, mm-hmm. you know, great, spectacular ideas, and it should be mm-hmm. big and small, and it should be, and, you know, there's something about the fact that Joe Biden is a, you know, is a dyed-in-the-wool, cradle-to-grave Catholic. And
yeah.
there's a picture of the Pope on his desk. He really, you know, it was a wonderful thing. I personally liked the fact that so much country music was infused in there. I didn't feel bad making jokes about it.
No, and I Tim McGraw, I think, was one
Tim
of
McGraw.
Them. And we when after he sang, I said, I think that song was called "I'm an Independent Constitutional Conservative Who Never Liked the Tweeting." Yes. Let's hug.
Yeah, and I believe it because it was like I just wrote this afternoon, so here we go. And it was, and I thought, oh,
let's hug it out.
It's like I was my money was on. Why did you give me the Rona Lurleen? And, you know, that was his take on, you know, you took my dog and you took my horse and you took my truck and you cost me my job and you gave me the Rona. And because you just stick that on there and it becomes a tragic country music song. All of which is to say it gave us space to breathe and mm-hmm. and appreciate the sort of the not a return to something, mm-hmm. but there's an alternate version of the universe where this sort of thing would be considered just normal. And yep. I don't want to go back to the what I'm being told over and over and over 1,000 times a day on radio and television was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Because everything bad
yeah,
started
right.
4 or 5 years ago. I don't want to go back to the Bush administration. I don't want to go back to the birthers, you know, standing on Barack Obama's throat and calling him a Kennedy usurper and stealing Supreme. Mm-hmm. That was what happened before Trump. I don't want to go back mm-hmm. to that. I want a different country. I want the best of what's available. And we only get there. We only get to that place by remembering how we got here, mm-hmm. what went wrong, who we really are, who we could be, and the distance between who we were for the last 4 years and, frankly, the last 240 years, mm-hmm. and where we want to be. The Martin Luther King idea of, I'm not here to ask for anything new. I'm here to ask for what you already promised me.
Right.
And I don't think that's
right.
unreasonable. I think there's 74 million people in this country, many of whom are armed to the teeth, who think that's no, we're not going to do that. But yeah, we are.
But let's talk about the two core responses to this week.
Yeah. Okay.
The first being people seeing a widely diverse plain folks performance.
Mm-hmm.
A kind of advertising where healthcare workers singing along.
Yeah.
And they're all different races and all different genders. And Braden, the boy who stuttered over the summer, delivering John F. Kennedy's inaugural address perfectly.
You know what it reminded me of? Reminded me of junior high school assemblies with mm-hmm. up with people.
It was corny but effective, and
exactly.
that widely diverse plain folks advertising in the service of Democrats comes across as genuine
yep.
every time, because that is who the party is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not patting myself on the back as a white woman for that at all.
No.
We're going to get into Bree Newsom's tweet in a moment, and we white Democrats have a lot to answer for.
We're happy to be part of Stacey Abrams' party.
To be part of Stacey Abrams' army and let her lead.
Yeah,
and I don't mean let; I mean she leads. That's what I mean. That contrasted with how dare Joe Biden mention white supremacy? What
right.
does he mean by that? He's silencing conservative thought. Right out of the bucket, that's their reaction and response.
Yep. Yep.
You dust protest way too much, folks.
That's Karl Rove right out of the box.
Karl Rove. I was really pleased at a number of people remembering the past. Dave Nywert remembering the past and saying, this is Michelle Malkin 2009.
Mm-hmm.
This is when the FBI had a report saying, look, these white nationalists are arming themselves to the teeth and going underground. It's going to be a serious domestic terrorist threat. And Michelle Malkin jumps on television on Fox and says, Obama wants to silence conservatives. And this is Obama's FBI saying conservatives can't criticize him because they're terrorists. How dare you call me a terrorist?
And I got to say, this is a little bit later on and we'll go into it in much greater depth, but I am very hopeful mm-hmm. that as we started hearing the phrase both sides do it being made mock of all across the internet, led by, frankly, people like us, because, you know, we were out there really early and really frequently and almost to the point of making our listeners sick of it. Sorry about that, but job well done, everyone. Well done. But now we're hearing words like memory and amnesia.
Right.
More than I ever heard them before. And they're all predicated on this. We can't let them do it again.
Right. Never again.
Do it again. And that is incredibly encouraging. It's a small number of people now, but there is a, despite the fact there is this concerted effort to cut the past off at a certain point, there are people like Sheldon Whitehouse who's saying, you want to talk about Sheldon Whitehouse for a minute?
Well, I don't want to skip over Bree Newsom.
Oh, no, no, we don't do that.
We got to go by our notes, I think, or we'll forget something. Here's the quote of the day from Bree Newsom. "I don't share the desire that others have in unifying with those who've shown they want to kill us. At some point, I think we need to examine how much the fixation with unifying with white supremacists and convincing them to love us is rooted in oppression and the centering of whiteness."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's a deep, deep question that all of us, particularly white Democrats, need to ask. Well, how are we centering whiteness?
You know, I never recommend anyone else's podcast because it takes away from the spotlight.
All the time in the
and
world.
You know that I have a tortured relationship with crooked media, which they're not aware of because they don't know I exist. So it's kind of a one way thing. But I would recommend Anna Marie Cox's Friends Like These this week. She does a lot of other stuff that just doesn't interest me, frankly, or isn't my cup of tea. But this week she interviewed Adam Serwer on this very subject. And he did the memory thing. He said, you know, McKinley in 1890 gave the same speech, except, you know, he didn't mention white nationalism. And he talked about unity and how everything's behind us and how we need to come together as a nation.
After the Civil War,
we need to come together and put all this, the racism's over. And there was the largest, bloodiest coup by white supremacists in history immediately thereafter. And he did nothing about it at all.
Yeah.
He didn't even mention it at all. And white supremacists took the idea that this dumbass is his call for unity means we can get away with whatever the hell we want. And that was
That is a perfect segue into Sheldon Whitehouse.
Yes, I believe it
Sheldon is. Whitehouse on Medium this week. And I do recommend you go read it. It is part one of four, he promises. And he's going to put these out once a week. And I love that he's decided to drizzle this out and not have a four-part article in one article, because he needs to be on television for the next 4 weeks talking about how we make things better.
Episodic television, I'm telling you.
Yeah, yeah. But his series, part one of which came out this week, is called Mistakes We Should Not Repeat. And he really should have called it No Fair Remembering Stuff.
I know.
But I think, you know, maybe he respected our copyright, unlike a lot of other people. I don't know.
Have we sent him a No Fair Remembering Stuff bumper?
No, we have not. Okay. We should. No Fair Remembering Stuff. He said that the Democrats made a mistake saying, let's move ahead. And he very specifically says, and I'll read this. "The newly elected Obama administration decided that it was going to look forward, not back, and step out into a new and glad post-partisan future. Republicans laughed as they garroted that effort and gleefully and immediately dedicated themselves to neutering the Obama administration. But they also breathed a joyful sigh of relief as they realized there would be no accountability for the torture program and the bodyguard of lies surrounding it, for climate obstruction and the falsehoods upon which it stood, for the dishonorable conduct of industry hacks put into positions of public authority, or for the deceit that launched us into a bloody trillion-dollar war. This free pass was a message to the future that surely emboldened Trump administration flunkies as they took power and began to work their evil deeds in government. The Trump administration was orders of magnitude worse than the Bush administration in most areas. The only improvement over Bush, and no small one, is that Trump did not start a futile war on false pretenses. The Trump years of corruption have been out of historic bounds and require investigation. no more not looking back. And he starts the next paragraph with, I'm a prosecutor.
And you can just see him thumbing his suspenders in a hot summer's day on the porch. Mm-hmm. I'm just a country prosecutor. I don't know a whole lot about stuff, but let me tell you. Yeah.
And then he also in this article early on has a message for Democrats. Democrats, including us progressive, possess some unhelpful traits. We can be a herd of cats. We can fixate on process and rules while our opponents amass power. We can create purity testing circular firing squads, splintering over differences in ways that impede our own victory. We see our struggle as one over policy without giving due to the tough, seasoned, complex, dark money-funded apparatus that opposes us. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to start getting really comfortable with power now. This is what having all three branches of government barely. Mm-hmm. And I've said several times this week, we need to Joe Manchin-proof our majority in 2022. Yes.
Great phrase.
You know, this is the problem.
Absolutely. Yep.
This is the problem. But we're going to have to set aside people who are our allies, who want to scream about small differences instead of, no, boom, hammer down Republicans and make progress for, I hate the word, the American people, but that's what I mean.
Well, that's what
that is very cringing to me.
Let's just say that we believe in health care, job security, clean air and clean water for everybody.
And decent wages. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Right.
We believe in that stuff.
Mm-hmm,
and,
we do.
And it was a, well, we'll get to the press secretary later, but yeah, she was a breath of fresh air.
She is a breath of fresh air.
I didn't want to let the moment pass without mentioning that there's another event that took place this week, which is of mm-hmm. some note, thanks to mm-hmm. The change of administration, really. Science Fiction University has returned.
Yes.
In accordance with CDC guidelines about not doing science fiction podcasts during a pandemic.
No.
The Professional Left did the right thing and put itself on hiatus.
No.
Back in March. That's not what we did?
No.
I'm pretty sure that's what we did. I don't think you were at the meeting, but we agreed. But now Anthony Fauci
had nothing
yesterday.
To do with the CDC.
Anthony Fauci yesterday just said it's okay. You can do science fiction stuff now. It's great. And rip your masks off and do a podcast. So we have returned to the fold. We've changed our introduction to each week to about once every so often.
Whenever we get to it,
yeah,
right. But I'm hoping once a month. I'm really hoping this year we do once a month.
Me too. I think that's a good target. So we have a brand new episode of Science Fiction University Up, which is available everywhere. It's on the Science Fiction University website.
Which is sciencefictionuniversity.com.
Yeah. So it's not hard to find. And it's on – I posted it on my blog.
I'm writing on my blog again.
Oh, that's which is wonderful.
Yeah, my wife Blue Gal.
Is such a good writer, and you have been pouring so much blood, sweat, and tears into Crooks and Liars, which is much the better for it. But I'm glad that you've gotten back to writing your own stuff on your own site.
I'm writing my own stuff, and I'm writing about what books I'm reading and what knitting I'm doing, and a lot of the political stuff is going, as Driftglass just said. You know, that's Crooks and Liars is where I do that for money. So. Yeah. But I am getting back to writing at my blog, and it feels really good. So,
yeah.
And there were a couple of people that wrote me over the Christmas holiday and said, I really want to see the sweaters you made for the kids. You've talked about them. So they're posted at Blue. If you Google Blue Gal, you'll find me. I'm right at the top of the Google search. So,
mm-hmm.
And Driftglass got banned from Twitter this week. It's not Twitter jail. He's banned. And we're really fighting this.
Yeah, speaking of not writing anymore on a medium that you've written on for a long time. Yeah, Twitter wrote me and told me that I'm banned for life from Twitter. And if I attempt to start a new Twitter account, they will suspend that one too forever. So I'm off of Twitter forever.
Well, we're fighting that. We really are fighting that and appealing.
And I've
gotten mixed messages back. Shock is trying to help me, and other people have written me and said, well, it's possible it's not a permanent ban. And
And we've had a lot of, I've had a lot of support from lots of people on the internets who were like, mm-hmm. you did what to who now? Well, it must have been something pretty bad. You did, oh, you called a wingnut trash.
Yeah.
Who stepped
and said her opinions were trash. Who talked to you first?
She stepped up and said, like, you and all the other lefties are batshit crazy in wokistan. I said, well, you're trash and your opinions are worthless and blah, 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 which, you know, and that was it, which I have seen worse stuff, you know, as Shox did say, I've said worse things arguing with you over cilantro. And I got a notice immediately thereafter that I'm banned for life for that tweet, which in no way impugned her heritage or her race or her gender, didn't ask her to do physical harm, didn't target this person. I went through the Twitter rules very carefully, and it didn't even come close to violating any of them at all. It wasn't even a close call. So there are some theories floating around, one of which is, we need to make an example of some liberal out there who ain't a blue check, because that would be that would make us look stupid, and who isn't a celebrity, but somebody who's just sort of floating in the middle there, who's a nuisance, who pisses off never Trumpers and pisses off and
people who are in the know about this. Say, you know, Twitter hates bad press.
Yeah,
and if they do that to a blue check like Donald Trump,
right?
You know, that makes national news.
But they have to be able to tell their, you know, whoever they answer to, stockholders and users, that no, we police both sides. We police both sides. And I just posted up, you know, just I pulled from like the same week, Rick Wilson just calling someone inbred.
No, he said someone's mother drank battery acid while nursing you.
Something to that effect. She was huffing it in the men's room where she, you know, whoring herself out and just
at a gas station somewhere. Yeah, I mean, it was just really personal. About your mom. And that's trash talk, but still.
And that's his everyday vocabulary.
It's
like, and you're, well, no, see, and here's the problem. There aren't an army of bots and trolls who are hunting down Rick Wilson and making his life unpleasant and calling his attention to, you know, the Twitter jailers every time. So, like I said, I expect it to, you know, be forever, but maybe some of the lobbying efforts will flip it over. And again, there's a theory that it's David Frum and Stuart Stevens who really don't like being called, you know, out like I do every day, or used to, on a public forum. Like this very day, Stuart Stevens had written this glowing thing about Michael Gerson is one of the greatest human beings I've ever met. And I met him in 1999. And he's a fucking saint. He's such a wonderful guy. I said, maybe you've forgotten. I just went down like 15 examples of, here's where David Gerson said this, and here's where he said this. Michael Gerson. One of the benefits of having a 16-year deep archive and writing every day is that I have this stuff at my fingertips. So I just pulled it out and said, here's like a 12,000-word post that would have been in The Atlantic in an alternate universe, and that you would have seen it there, detailing all the shit Michael Gerson used to believe, like right up until Donald Trump was elected. And it was just heinous stuff about Barack Obama and Democrats and socialists and how just awful, awful shit. And all of which has gone down the memory hole because it's very inconvenient for Stuart Stevens, who actually did write a book called It's a Lie, to personalize it to his close personal friend, Michael Gerson, who he needs to believe is a saint, even though that is a lie. So I went, here's where you're wrong and you're wrong and you're wrong. And here's the proof and here's the proof and here's the receipt. And about 2 hours later, I was banned for life from Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it could have been.
Well, and this is particularly hard on me that you've been banned from Twitter. Well, yeah.
You know why? Because I don't have an outlet anymore. So I just go around the house shouting, you're wrong, @ Stuart Stevens. Michael Gerson has been a bilious troll for decades. Yeah. So I just shout my tweets now at my poor wife, or generally at the universe.
Actually, it is hard on me just from the standpoint of prepping for this podcast. So often I will just forward stuff to you and say podcastable here. And I've been proud of Driftglass because you've really not interested in going behind Twitter and creating a fake account or doing something, you know. No, I want my account back or goodbye, farewell, and I'll take my hits and move on. But it's very unfair, and it's definitely an uneven
selective enforcement.
Yeah, that's the word. They are enforcing the rules very wildly selectively. Yeah. Yes.
And honestly, this is a little bit of a deeper complaint, which I'm not going to let it get at great length now. But everyone who listens to this podcast knows I got thrown into Twitter jail for calling Bill Maher a whore with a W. Mm-hmm. Go mm-hmm. on and look at the number of people who use that word now. It's gone from Twitter, by the way. It's gone. No one uses it anymore because they made an example of me. And now no one calls anyone a whore on Twitter. Ever.
Yeah,
ever,
they do ever. All the time. No, they didn't. Okay.
I got tossed for the G word for GIMP and go out. I just went on the day of because I use a quote from Pulp Fiction to refer to Lindsey Graham. And there were like 1,500 people using the same quote to refer to Lindsey Graham like that day. So yeah, it yeah. isn't me. It is definitely not me. And it's not well, the things
you're
I
just
think.
You're just big enough on Twitter to be a target.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, moving on. That's why you haven't seen me on Twitter. And please, one more thing. Don't DM me on Twitter. I can still see my profile and there's all these DMs stacking up. You know what ban for life means, right? I can't right. see anything you send me. I can't respond right. to it. I'm, right. I'm out. So please stop doing that. But mail checks to P.O. Box 9133,
Springfield, Illinois, 62791. Don't send them to the lady who hired a private jet to fly to the MAGA riot.
No.
Because she's now fundraising on wherever, whatever platform she's using to try to get help for. She needs a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, I need money for my legal defense because Donald Trump didn't pardon me.
Yeah.
So she's fundraising. Although she rented a Learjet to take her to the riot. Okay.
As one does. That's how one goes.
As one does, yes.
Yeah.
There is no honeymoon for Joe Biden on Fox News. Fox yep. News has just dropped right back into Obama territory. Sean Hannity, the first day on the job, called the newly inaugurated president the weak, the frail, cognitively struggling Biden. And Hannity, I did a whole article about Hannity's monologue where he's just, as you called it, a carbon-based Pez dispenser spitting out disjointed sentence fragments made up of Fox News talking points. The phrase of the day, the day before the inauguration, was re-education camps. They're going to force Republicans into re-education camps mm-hmm. to erase our memories of Donald Trump. It's going to happen. They're going to put us in a camp. And here was Hannity. And, you know, I don't expect that people won't ad lib on cable TV or they won't talk about, you know, but this guy had nothing. He didn't have a script. He didn't have a preparation. It was just one catchphrase after that. I'm going to tell you, folks, I've been at this business for 30 years on radio and television and camps. That's it. Camps. Mm-hmm. They're going to put us in camps because of our differing political opinions. Yeah. Political opinions, you know, this is America. And it was as if he'd been told to stretch it out because the next commercial wasn't ready yet, you
right.
know.
Right.
And we've heard from Brian Stelter's book that Hannity is just incredibly lazy.
Yeah.
And will occasionally record his news show the previous day so he can have a 3-day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not news. It's just Biden, laptop, you know, Hunter Biden. And last night, Thursday night, he interviewed the Lucky Charms leprechaun, computer repairman, about Hunter Biden's laptop. And this guy was wearing a tam o' shanter.
Oh, let me tell you. Oh, there's so much gold on this laptop, you wouldn't believe it. Oh, my God.
You yeah. got to look at the picture and or if you can see the clip somewhere, Hannity interviewing the Hunter Biden laptop guy. And it's not just Hannity. Everyone is returning to square one.
Well, yeah.
In the media.
And that is literally true because I remember, and I'm sure you do too, right after Obama's inauguration, mm-hmm. right after, mm-hmm. There was a whole special on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart about Potato Day. About dead Andrew Breitbart talking about how it used to be St. Patrick's Day, but thanks to liberals and the liberal elite and their jackbooted blah, 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 now it's called Potato Day at my son's school. And just this whole string of all the same people that you see on television now, except the ones that are now dead, like Andrew Breitbart, all the same people, you know, tyranny has come to our shores. And what was Michelle Bachmann saying? Or it was Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin, because they're the same person, let's face it.
Uh-huh.
You know, she was frightened of the FEMA re-education camps that they were definitely going to be set up and we were going to be sent there. And John Stewart said, yeah, but you have to educate them first.
And before you re-educate them. Yep.
But it is just a stupid thing that these, since I could do it on the podcast, these trash people all have programmed into their brains. They have a little pleasure center. And every time they get touched, one of them gets touched. Ooh, re-education. Ooh, gun grabbers. Ooh, gay agenda. Ooh, the small government. Ooh, Kenya. They have a little shot of pleasure that goes through their brain. And that's all you have to do to go on Fox. You have to, if you're a woman, you have to have short skirt and tits and be blonde, preferably, and just spew this bullshit out and interview leprechauns for some reason. And you look at this and you realize if Fox News started today, just, you know, this were a normal, healthy country and the basic primetime lineup of Fox News were rolled out today, the police and mental health professionals would show up and drag them away. It took 30 years of tuning up the base to be this stupid and this brainwashed and this hateful and this racist and this willing to believe anything they say to get to a point where Sean Hannity can basically jerk off at his desk and make you like it and interview a leprechaun and think it's news and you not change the channel and go, holy shit, what is this? And that's 74 million people in this country are that fucked in the head. That's the next.
Well, and they've been fucked in the head by a very conscious brainwashing effort by Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this before, but Benghazi, Whitewater, emails, Solyndra, baby parts, Fast and Furious, the tarmac, Vince Foster, birth certificate, food stamp fraud, on and on and on. Christmas card list, tan suit, whatever. All of that is trigger words to, as you say, emote an immediate, hateful, rabid mental response. And if you've been subject to that nightly, by turning on a thing that you call the news to have it drilled into your brain that you'll have this reaction every time you hear tarmac, Hillary Clinton, crime, Bill Clinton, crime, you know, of course, this is what's going to happen to you. And the problem is it's happening to our country. It would be one thing if we had them in a paddock, you know, in a re-education camp.
Well, just an island somewhere. You know, we'll feed them. We'll make sure they have the good. Just like in Lost, on an island somewhere.
But because of gerrymandering and because of the racist policies of minority rule in the Senate, we have a real problem in our politics and in our government.
And because of, let's face it, capitalism. Because if I happen to miss Sean Hannity's show one day, which, you know, geez, I would never let that happen. I don't need to worry because on the local radio station that has one liberal on it for 2 hours a day, I believe, or three maybe, that's it. That's the only liberal radio you're going to find anywhere in where we live. I believe right after him or 30 minutes after him is the Sean Hannity show. So I guess the radio station does that for balance, but I think they do it because they know they live in a county. They broadcast in a broadcast area that went overwhelmingly for Darren LaHood and Rodney Davis and Donald Trump. This is Trump country. And so these shitheads want to listen to is toxic bullshit being crapped into their skulls. Yeah. And that's what local commercial radio will give them because that is what they want. And that's what they want to sell cars and they want to sell real estate and they want to sell housing services and lawn care. They want to sell all the things that keep the radio station running. They want people to buy that shit. And the only reason they come to that place is because they get to hear Sean Hannity 2 or 3 hours a night in addition to their daily fix.
Right.
And that's just – and that's everywhere. That's everywhere in this country except for, you know, little liberal enclaves like, let's say, Chicago. You won't – but everywhere else in this country, this poison is just bubbling right below the surface and it's not going away. That's why I did a post today yesterday. It was very short. My mood is shawarma because I'm feeling like the end of the first Avengers movie. Where, you know – Tony Stark wakes up and goes, what happened? And Captain America looks around and says at this rubble and says, well, we won. And Thor says, but it's not over. I'm like, okay. Well, first of all, yay.
Let's have some shawarma.
And let's all take the day off tomorrow. Okay. Let's all rest and let's go have some shawarma together. So, and all that is true. And that really is my mood. I think there's real cause for celebration and hope. That the new administration looks great. They have cabinet appointments that are going very well so far. and whatever policy agreements you might have, legitimate policy disagreements you might have with him, there's not a Betsy DeVos or Wilbur Ross or Ben Carson in that bunch anywhere. Mm-hmm. So they are just an order or two or three of magnitude better than anything the Trump administration did. And we have a new press secretary named Jen Psaki, who is not a pathological liar. I know this
she's
is
shocking. Not.
She's yeah. not. And so far, and granted, it's been a day and a half or 2 days, she has been very good at deconstructing clickbait batshit questions that would cause me to come across the podium and start punching people. Like asked, you know, why aren't you giving a fig leaf and a cookie and a pat on the head to Republicans? Why aren't you appointing Republicans to the cabinet? Huh? Why? What's just unity talk? And rather than say, shut your hole, you ass, she says, what, Republicans don't believe in unemployment insurance?
Yeah.
Republicans
Do they not want COVID to go away?
Do they don't believe in vaccines? Do they not want businesses open? Do they not want schools open? Because those are all real bipartisan things that we're all in favor of.
We really want to reopen schools. Yeah.
Which shut him down.
Yes,
And it was honest. It was a correct answer. Yeah. And Fauci comes out there and says, you know what? Yeah, I'm liberated. Now I now work at a place where the science guides what we say. We're going to be very transparent. If we make a mistake, we're going to correct it. We're not going to lie about it. And if I say something that is bad or unfortunate, no one's going to punish me for it if the science is right. No, I don't have to worry about it.
And also, if he doesn't know the answer, he's allowed to say, I don't know.
Yeah. Which is
and you could tell he was just delighted that he was able to say, we don't have the answer to that one yet. Mm-hmm. Let's go find out. Let's put some funding in it so we can go find out.
As the website The Beaverton said this week, Canada is happy for the friend who just got out of the terrible relationship.
Oh, like, well, and the analogies to an abused spouse, I can personally attest to that.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of other women who can personally attest to the PTSD of having to wake up every day wondering if the president of the United States slash your aunt, your husband has woken up in a good mood or not. Mm-hmm. And that's going to affect your whole day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and being glad that he just went off to the golf course for the day. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank God he's gone.
Yep.
You know, that you've kept him occupied with something else. So, yeah, I mean, that we're out of that terrible relationship. And let's again. It's like when you get divorced.
Yeah, we wouldn't know
nothing about again,
that. Never right? again. Never again. I did want to say something. I wrote a long, long thing that I'm not going to read, but I did want to mention something that about St. Peter's Basilica and indulgences and the invention of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long thing, and it's something I've written about before and talked about on this podcast incessantly, but I want to mention it again because we talk a lot about amnesia and memory and memories are secret is our superpower. And we have to remember the past and how we now have a large number of people who agree that we can't let this happen again. And again is the key word because again means this happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen, as I've already said, if you listen carefully to pretty much every MSNBC broadcast, if you listen to CNN, if you listen to Never Trump podcast, if you read them in the paper, Tom Nichols had a thing yesterday in the Atlantic and it everything began in 2016. Nothing preceded it. And according to Tom Nichols, everything is the fault of Americans. There's an amorphous, there's no political parties. There's just Americans did a really stupid thing. And under Trump, America became this whiny, entitled asshole country. And it had nothing to do with anything that certainly Tom Nichols was involved
certainly
with.
Certainly didn't have anything to do with the Republican Party, right?
And
or Republican base voters.
No.
Chose
no.
Donald Trump, right?
Just people, yeah. Just people. And the people who invaded the Capitol, the insurrectionists, were Trump cultists. They weren't Republicans. They were Trump cultists. And they were just as bad as pretty much the BLM people for pretty much the same reason. And it was just he is such a fucking dishonest scumbag. He is so smug and self-righteous. And the problem is he writes for The Atlantic now. He's our friend now. His goal and the goal of most of these guys, not all of them, most of them, is you're not going to hold me responsible or anyone else I know for any of the things that happened before 2016, period. Right. Even though I did it. So why? Why can't we? I mean, if they are all now bragging about how brilliant they were for seeing Trump coming in 2016, how come – those of us who saw this coming in 2009, in 2006, in 1994, aren't even more virtuous, even more brilliant. Well, because that would lead to a bunch of unfortunate questions. about right. what our new prophets were doing. So they have divided time up into three pieces. There's a before time and a middle time and an after time. And the reason is very simple. And this is where St. Peter's Basilica comes in. That beautiful building in the Vatican, the first or second largest church in the world, was paid for by a thing called indulgences, which when the Catholic Church invented hell, when St. Augustine invented hell out of whole cloth and decided that people who sin in a particular way are going to burn in a lake of fire forever, it was game over. Because for the next 1,500 years, Catholics, all of Catholicism is about who's going to hell and who's going to hell's sleepaway camp called purgatory and who's going to heaven. And the only person who got to decide whether you were going to hell or not was your local priest, was mm-hmm. the church. They mm-hmm. decided whether or not you will burn in a lake of fire forever or you'll go to paradise. And they decided, this is pretty cool. We own a monopoly on this. So we can start just charging people for it. We can charge money for it. And St. Peter's Basilica, which took, I believe, 500 years to build or something like that, a staggering amount of time to finish, was paid for by charging rich people a fee to keep them out of hell.
Mm-hmm. You call it indulgence.
It's yeah. called an indulgence. And there were partial indulgences for the budget-minded sinner. And there were complete indulgences, total indulgences for all of your sins are forgiven for a certain amount of money. And this went on for centuries. In fact, it went on pretty much until a guy named Martin Luther showed up and said, what the fuck is going on here? And disrupted everything. And eventually there was a counter-reformation and blah, blah, blah. But this is a thing. You invent a process by which you are either saved or you're damned. Mm-hmm. And then you invent that process. And then you put yourself in the middle of it as the sole arbiter of who gets saved and who gets damned. And that's
very helpful, because that's why Rick Wilson is talking about you'll never work in this town again.
Exactly. Because
that's the hell.
That's the hell. And it's Rick Wilson
nobody
saying
nobody in Washington wants to be in. Right.
Well, Steve Schmidt.
It has to be a revolving door.
Steve Schmidt had said, you know, book publishers went down the list of things, all the things that never Trumpers do. They get books, they get magazine gigs, they get speaking engagements. He said, basically, if you have those things and you aren't saved, then you're mm-hmm. then you don't get any of that. And Stuart Stevens says, and we're keeping an enemies list. We're keeping mm-hmm. a database at the Lincoln Project of all the people who didn't get right with Jesus soon enough. Now, here's the tricky part. George Conway didn't get right with the Lord until like 2017, maybe mm-hmm. 2018.
Late 2017.
So we have to have the start time for salvation being then. The latest possible moment you can be saved is 2018. But the earliest possible moment that you go to hell is 2019 or so. Mm-hmm. So after that, you know, mm-hmm. you're beyond salvation. And they have been very clear. Unless you confess and atone, you're fucked. Now, that is, by the way, exactly what I asked of the Lincoln Project people 5 years ago and 4 years ago and yes, 3 years ago and 2 years ago, and was told by my allies, what the hell are you doing? They're our friends. They're the good guys. Well, you know what? Those good guys now control the media. You can't swing a fucking dead cat on MSNBC without hitting a Never Trumper. Where are all my friends at Slate? Where are all the liberal bloggers? Are you on MSNBC? Do you write for The Atlantic? No, you do not, because they own the message now. And what's the message? Everything before 2016, which means all of your liberal blogs and your archives and your podcasts, don't count. Mm-hmm. Being right before 2016 is just we're not even going to talk about it. You don't exist. Liberals do not exist. The only people who exist are people who are Republican and who got right with God between 2016 and 2018. And that's the before time. And there's the middle time, where the saved are. And people who came to Jesus during that time are geniuses. They're martyrs too, because they gave up a lot of money to get right with God. I've seen them get book contracts and TV deals, so I'm not sure how much money they actually gave up. But apparently they lost an incredible amount of money by doing the right thing. Well, good for them.
Well, no, they're going to Israel now. Well, yeah, and doing ad buys for foreign countries. So.
Sure. You're going to mention that. That's just going to ruin. You're going to get yourself kicked off Twitter for doing that.
That ruins the narrative if they make money overseas in political campaigns.
And the after time. You only get let back into the club of the saved if you bend your knee and ask forgiveness from Rick Wilson.
Yeah.
That's it.
Now, Drift Glass, I'm going to ask you something.
And I'm done with that discussion, but.
Good, because you and I kind of had a disagreement about this morning about whether, you know, we needed to continue to dwell on the Lincoln Project. And here's my deal. Mm-hmm. If the Lincoln Project goes on and owns MSNBC, so to speak, the minutes, all the free airtime that they get.
Several million a day in free advertising. Yep.
That's their career.
Right.
Meanwhile, Joe Biden, who, by the way, reminds me a lot in the way he's operating of our governor, Pritzker.
Yeah, he does. He does.
In terms of going along, getting behind a podium, saying folks, talking about stuff. And then he goes back to work and all this liberal shit happens.
Yep.
All these progressive agenda things happen. The guy at the lawyer at the National Labor Relations Board got fired.
Gone.
And that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah. Keystone Pipeline dead.
He put a woman who is an active net neutrality activist mm-hmm. in charge of the FCC. She is an acting director of the FCC now. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I forget her name, but the only reason she's acting is she's not sure she wants the job, I believe, for the full term.
Uh-huh.
But she definitely wants to come in and clean up the shit that the Trump administration did on net neutrality. That is mm-hmm. a passion of hers. And there she is in a position of power to do it. And so, getting all this liberal shit done while Rick Wilson is on MSNBC, I'll take it.
You make a very good point. You make a very valid point. My only problem, and this is where I'm going to win this debate because I already know the outcome, which is if you let the people who committed atrocities get away with rewriting the past, it will mm-hmm. repeat itself.
Yeah.
Just always
right,
will.
Right.
So
right,
the entire right. liberal critique of the right of conservatives is now non-existent.
Except here's the deal.
Uh-huh.
I think, and I maybe I'm just a Pollyanna, and mm-hmm. and if I am, I am.
Okay.
Everyone seems to be, as I said earlier in this podcast, seems to be returning to square one.
That's true.
Chuck Todd is saying, if he doesn't get 100 million doses yeah. out, and he said this like the day before he's inaugurated. He'll be a failed president. That'll be it. Mm-hmm. And everyone on Twitter jumped down his throat.
Well,
fire him. Fire him. Well, you weren't there.
There's the problem. Yeah.
There's the problem. Mm-hmm. but everyone is returning to square one except the audience.
Uh-huh.
And I really feel like the number of women who felt that Donald Trump was an abusive spouse uh-huh. and had PTSD over almost losing their health care
mm-hmm.
in March, April of 2017 and the Rose Garden party that Republicans had over taking away health care
uh-huh.
from millions of people, 21 million people.
Yeah.
We have a lot of PTSD over this administration
yeah.
and we're different now. We're radicalized now. There was a woman on Twitter who said that she sort of had a jolt about herself this week mm-hmm. because 4 years ago she looked at the Republican Party and the Republican Senate as a bunch of white guys. And she said, I was sitting there watching Senate proceedings and yelling at individual senators by first name and last name, you fucker, you fucker.
Yeah.
And she turned to her husband and she said, 4 years ago, I didn't know any of these guys.
Yeah. I didn't know.
We've been radicalized. Yeah. We've been radicalized. And mm-hmm. that there's no going back from that.
I agree.
So I think there's a shock coming to the system, a further shock coming to the system. And it's going to be tested in the midterms in 2022. I'm so glad to see people already talking about the midterms, already saying we've got to solidify our majority in the Senate. There's a hunger to just get Mitch McConnell out of there.
Yep. Well, that's not going to happen because elected.
But if there's five more Democratic senators in the Senate,
absolutely. No.
He doesn't get to hold up anything and say power sharing bullshit.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And the whole power sharing bullshit thing. I mean, the Democratic base needs to be a base to be reckoned with in like manner to how the Republican base is terrifying Republican senators right now.
I think
we have a better relationship with our senators uh-huh. and they aren't quite as terrified of us in a violent way.
Yep.
But they need to be aware that we're watching
mm-hmm.
and that we are not ready to make nice. And we don't want bipartisanship. We want them to take power and wield it and make the world a better place. Our agenda matters.
I will not disagree with any of that. It's all completely correct. And I'll leave it at this. And I don't mm-hmm. mean to say get the last word because
no, but I think this makes a good podcast yeah. because of our different perspectives. Well,
and because I get the last word because of the patriarchy. So
no, I was going to say the dick measuring that you must do with Rick Wilson is so important.
Right? Well, and you know, I'm sorry, I don't gamble on that when I know I'm going to win. It's not called right. gambling if you know you'll crush the little guy. So you know that's exactly. just that's not even fair.
He's 6'8", has a size 13 shoe, and he's yeah. not worried, folks.
I'm not worried at all. I'm fine. Everything about my life is so much better than I deserve. I count my blessings every day. I've been through, you know, I've been unemployed and lost several careers. Everything about my life is better than I deserve. And I believe that and I understand that. And I do count my blessings every day. I will say, however, control of the message, the mainstream media message still matters. Mm-hmm. It still matters because it is a slow, erosive process. Mm-hmm. If you tell someone both sides are bad once, they're going to laugh you out of church. Mm-hmm. If you tell them through David Broder and Peggy Noonan mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Tim Russert mm-hmm. for year after year after year, longer mm-hmm. than Fox News has been around.
Right.
And you train a large number of not terribly politically committed or maybe slightly politically committed people sort of in the middle that to automatically factor out any Republican atrocity because Democrats are just as bad. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. end up here. The reason right. we're here is a whole bunch of people have been brainwashed who aren't Fox News listeners, but have come to believe that as the joke I was telling in 2006 – if Dick Cheney were caught on the White House lawn throwing burning kittens at homeless veterans, the first three words out of David Gregory's mouth would be, but the Democrats. Mm-hmm. That's how mm-hmm. long this shit has been poisoning our dialogue. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the reason that more people do not rise up in righteous indignation and demand that the Congress stop fucking around and that the Democrats stop pulling their punches is because they believe in their heart that somehow both sides are wrong.
Yeah.
So both
yeah.
sides are bad. And that is what happened this week. I've seen three major publications. Tom Nichols is one of them. I'm not going to talk about David Brooks, but David Brooks is one of them. Have gone right back to both sides are bad. Yep. Both sides are wrong. Both sides left and right, left and right, left and right.
Yep.
And now maybe that is just an echo of a dying age. Maybe it has no influence at all.
I think it's their safe space for a place where they don't know where to stand. And I will add to that list. Mm-hmm. A protester, I believe it was in Washington State at the Capitol, who had a live stream of like six guys standing outside with 17 or 18 National Guard yeah, troops.
That was kind of hilarious.
And it was a live stream. But the moment I clicked on it to listen to the live stream, the guy had an air horn and he was saying, I'm an independent, believe it or not.
Yeah, of course you are.
Both sides are to blame in all of this.
Of course you are. This is where they go to regroup.
And this is where the mainstream media voices go to regroup as well.
And if we are saying that there must be consequences for Republicans for being horrible mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. we have to also say there have to be consequences for media personalities with huge audiences and enormous salaries when they are constantly wrong about everything all the time. There won't be. That's what scares me.
There won't be because of personal relationships.
If Sheldon yeah. Whitehouse is right, and he is, that we're not going to make the same mistake we made last time and let Republicans off the hook, there's no control mechanism over the media. There's nobody telling Phil Griffin to fire Chuck Todd and replace him with anyone else. There's no one telling the Sulzberger family that David Brooks has got to be put out to pasture. Mm-hmm. Set up state mm-hmm. to play with other centrists for the rest of his life. And some other person who actually will talk truth through that incredibly important piece of real estate at the New York Times op-ed page to the American people is actually someone you should get. Get Digby. If she doesn't want to go on television, great. Have her write a column for the New York Times twice a week. That'd be terrific. But there's no mechanism other than commerce. And commerce dictates that media corporations will provide the product that their customers want. And the customers now want on the right to believe liberals are monsters and in the middle that both sides are to blame. So
let's do a news roundup. Let me just read the quote of the week from Russian sock puppet and Republican Senator Ron Johnson.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Democrats can't have it both ways, an unconstitutional impeachment trial and Senate confirmation mm-hmm. of the Biden administration's national security team. Mm-hmm. He went that specific.
Yep.
Wow.
Yes, he did.
They need to choose between being vindictive or staffing the national security team. Mm-hmm. I'm stuck on that. I'm sorry. I'm really stuck on that.
Well, Ron Johnson is a Russian sock puppet.
Russian sock puppet. It's so specific that he's a Russian sock puppet about mm-hmm. this. They need to choose between being vindictive or staffing the administration to keep the nation safe.
Mm-hmm.
Which will it be, revenge or security? And, you know, he can go fuck himself. He's a Russian sock puppet.
I like one from column A and two from column B. That's all
mm-hmm.
I'm saying.
We can do all of it. Yes.
Now,
do you want to talk about local news and we skip through this?
Yeah. I'm going to skip a little bit through the national news because this week saw the worst abuse of pardon power in American history.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that the vaccine reserve was already exhausted, which we knew last week. This week we learned the Biden administration discovered there was never a vaccine plan at all. They
right.
had to start over from scratch. There was never a plan. Another Jared Kushner win for America.
And Trump's 1776 commission report,
yeah.
which people have compared to a C-minus sixth grade
yeah.
book report, supposed to be the definitive patriotic view of U.S. history that would save America from left-wing indoctrination by our schools by requiring a new pro-America curriculum, has been roundly mocked by historians, and a little over a quarter of the content was copied from other sources without citations, just like Melania's speech at the 2016 Republican convention.
And this,
yay!
And this little piece goes together. Today, Chuck Schumer said that he spoke to Speaker Pelosi and the articles of impeachment will be delivered on Monday. That's 2 days from now. Make no mistake, he said there will be a full trial. It'll be a fair trial. Okay, good. Mitch McConnell said the mob that stormed the Capitol was, quote, fed lies and, quote, provoked by the president into violence, which is great. Then Mitch McConnell turned around and said that he is going to filibuster the organizing resolution, which is the thing that allows Democrats to assume committee chair positions, which is completely unprecedented. So Mitch McConnell remains a soulless monster who is only interested in preserving power. Donald Trump doesn't interest him anymore. He is mm-hmm. Donald Trump is now useful as a stalling tactic. Sure, we'll mm-hmm. do impeachment, and we're going to drag this shit out for weeks, and mm-hmm. we're not going to let you get anything done at all. We're not going to let you do two things at once during the day, and then after 2 or 3 weeks, we'll convict him or we won't. But then we'll turn around and say, "Look how much time you wasted while America."
Mm-hmm. Oh, look, the 100 days is over.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Local news. Let's do local news.
Congressman Darren LaHood has joined a growing list of Republicans who find it divisive for Democrats to come out aggressively against white supremacists.
A headline hungry local Wingnut lawmaker named Dan Calkins, he's a Republican from Decatur, was infuriated that National Guard troops are being vetted in advance of the inauguration. He called it a slap in the face and demanded Governor Pritzker give them the option to return home. He's a retired member of the Illinois National Guard, and I must say, does not speak well of the Guard that a fragile snowflake like Dan Calkins was able to rise to the rank of infantry major.
Hmm.
I attended today a virtual political roundtable of political reporters, and they talked about a lot of stuff. It's a local citizens group, and it's very informative. And there's some things that I gleaned from the political reporters who do the shoe leather reporting in this town. First is, Adam Kinzinger looks like he's lining up to run for governor. But getting through the GOP primary will be brutal.
And then he'll lose to Pritzker.
Yeah, well, then he'll lose to Pritzker. But he's got a good resume, and he came out early, and he's like...
He came very early against Trump.
Yeah. So we'll see. At the local level, police reform is all bullshit. It's all talk. But at the state level, it looks like some actual good things are happening. The Black Caucus in Illinois passed 3 of the 4 pillars of mm-hmm. their changes during the lame duck session. That's a session, a special session we have in Illinois when they all come back and do a brief number of things. They did education reform, economic reform, and police reform. Watch for healthcare reform in the spring. They're proving that Black lives do in fact matter.
And we did hear from a couple of listeners that the new Speaker of the House in Springfield, who is the first Black speaker, mm-hmm. Is a machine politician, and you know, don't praise him too much because he's part of the Madigan machine, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't think anyone who's not a part of the Madigan machine could be elected speaker. So that corruption still exists and we're aware of it. I'm still going to celebrate the fact that we have the Black people have a representation in the leadership of the House of Representatives in Illinois. That is a good thing. And the Black Caucus is getting stuff done. They really are, for the people of Illinois.
And I will remind everyone that Harold Washington, mayor of the city of Chicago for 1.5 terms until he passed away, was a typical machine politician under the daily regime right up until he wasn't. And he was free to do what he wanted. And then he did some amazing stuff. So, I'm not going to say it's impossible or possible. I'm just going to sort of have an open mind until things move. The new economic development project here in Springfield, which is a public-private partnership, is not doing much of anything. And the guy they hired to run it is currently being paid more than the county officials, which is, you know, pretty typical for here. IDES, which is the employment office, the actual physical employment office in Springfield and across the state, has been a train wreck. I'm told they've been hiring. And I feel like I dodged a bullet a little bit because I actually applied for a job to run the place 2 years ago and was passed over for that job. The problem is Republicans have spent years hollowing out the government, and it's gotten somewhat better, but not a lot. So there's that. Everybody gives high marks to Governor Pritzker and to local school officials for handling the pandemic. We were reminded that public service, when it's done correctly, is just hard work and usually involves telling a lot of people things they don't want to hear, which nobody wants to do for a living. Now, this one hit home especially because it involves economic development in the one way the government can do economic development directly, which is move jobs around. The EPA building was relocated from the poor side of town to the richest side of town, taking all the jobs with them, and nobody knew. Everybody who was involved in the planning of it knew, of course, but nobody called reporters. Nobody called the paper. There were no protests. It was kept very quiet until it was done, you know, all in one night practically. This pulls hundreds of jobs out of an area that needed them and put them in a mall far away. This is the largest shift of jobs in the Springfield municipal area in history. Now, this is
unbelievable.
Here's why this is important. Not because those people live in that neighborhood. When I worked for the city of Chicago, I worked in a building that was on the corner of roughly Ashland and Chicago. The city, I knew that neighborhood from years gone by. It was Wicker Park and that area around there, which was a blighted, blown out, run down, neglected neighborhood. The city rehabbed the Goldblatt's building, which sat on that block, and moved several hundred, like 700 or 800 jobs into that building. Suddenly, there were restaurants there. There were drugstores there. There were shoe stores there. There was a nightlife on the block, which had never been there before. When you put people, working people, into a neighborhood, they
want to have a drink after work.
Exactly.
They do.
They have breakfast. Yeah. They have guests in. They don't want to drive all over the place. They move a lot.
They want coffee. Right. Yeah.
And the knock-on effect of moving jobs around has a huge effect. And it really did spark the rehabilitation of that neighborhood. Artists came and moved in. Entrepreneurs came and moved in. Record stores opened. Jewelry stores opened. And I got to watch it all basically out of my window. But the same thing happens in reverse. When you take a bunch of jobs out of a neighborhood, the restaurants that serve them and the dry cleaners that serve them and the other services that serve them dry up and blow away. And the most affected neighborhood is the place where you should do that the least. You should do it the other way around. And Springfield, the EPA, whoever was in charge of this, absolutely screwed over that neighborhood.
They fucking knew what they were doing, though.
Yes, they did. They wanted to be in the mall. We want to be in a mall.
They want to be on the white side of town, too.
Exactly. And then the reporters made some predictions, which I'll go through very quickly. First of all, there was like, you remember when this was all going to last for 2 weeks and we'll stay home, it'll all be okay? I do. And it didn't happen that way. That's over now. And working at home will probably become the norm, especially for people with long commutes, because it works now. Everybody knows it works now. Handshaking is over, at least for the foreseeable future. Unity. Oh, hell no. That's not going to happen. Forget about it. You can talk about it all you want, but it's not going to happen. There will be, as we've talked about on this podcast before, a probably huge pent-up demand for shopping and traveling. It turns out that the science fiction promise of remote learning kind of sucks. Face-to-face learning is irreplaceable, and teachers are the most important people in the community by far.
Period.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Hey, each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is a dog, and this is a dog named Joey. Joey came from a local rescue and is 3 years old. He, like many of our pets, has wonderful powers of healing and comfort and has been a great therapeutic pet to our listener, Anne Marie, during the course of the past year. we're so glad Joey found his forever home. And it looks like he found a job, too, being, you know, therapy. We're so glad. And not the least reason that we're so happy Joey found his forever home is he now gets a daily dose of freshly poured pet food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your pets will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Joey. He's a real cutie at our Facebook page or website. And you can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag save the post office. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job, and it's a labor of love. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Both our PayPal, postal address information, Patreon, it's all there at proleftpod.com. We've also got merch. Don't forget merch. And please share our show on social media. And thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are still waiting to hear who Biden will nominate as Secretary of Treats and Chin Scratching.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovin'. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2021 DGBG Productions.